Well, well, well. Look who's wandered back into the dark with me. Welcome, dear listeners, to Stories, Fables, Ghostly Tales, the podcast where the shadows get to stretch their legs, the floorboards creak a little louder, and absolutely no one gets out with clean hands. I'm your host, the Tale Teller, your humble escort through tonight's delightful little descent into despair. And oh, have I got a story for you lovelies. Tell me, what would you do if the world ran out of water? I'm not talking about a few dry taps and some grumbling about the weather. I mean bone dry. I mean dust for breakfast and blood for tea. Tonight's tale follows young Kia, a scavenger tiptoeing through the rotted carcass of a world that's been picked clean, or so they thought. There's talk of ancient texts, whispers of bringing the water back, and a few colourful characters with a taste of mayhem, body modification, and tattoos that don't know how to mind their own business. Will Kia uncover the secrets of salvation? Or, well, let's just say the only thing thirstier than the wasteland might be what's living under their skin. So grab a seat, settle in, and maybe check your arms for strange markings before we begin. Because tonight, the story's inked in blood, and it's starting to writhe. Let's begin. The Grey Expanse. There used to be water here. That's what they say, anyway. I wouldn't know. I've never seen it. Not real water. Not the kind that ran wild through rivers or pooled in lakes so deep they drowned the sky. I was born after all that dried up and blew away. Now there's just dust and wind and people who'd carve you open for the sweat on your back. But I keep moving. That's the trick, really. Move and don't stop. Don't look back. And definitely don't look anyone in the eye. Someone once told me staying alive was just a matter of staying forgotten. So that's what I do. Still, even I get stupid sometimes. Like today, standing out in the daylight, like I'm begging for a knife between the ribs, hood pulled low, scarf wrapped tight, feet aching in boots worn slick at the soles. Should have been holed up in some collapsed drainage pipe, waiting for nightfall, but no. Here I am, crossing open ground toward what's left of a cathedral, and all because of one damn word. Scripture. I heard it whispered in the dark, from a man who died before I could get his boots off. Heard it again, from a woman who tried to trade her own teeth for a sip of water that didn't exist. They all say the same thing. Somewhere out here, there's writing old enough to bring the water back. Words that can wake the rivers, call the rain home. Most people laugh when they hear that. I don't. The cathedral's a black tooth just jutting from the earth, half eaten by the sand, roof caved in, bones of the place sticking out in rusted beams and shattered glass. The wind slips through the gaps, singing the same tired song it's been humming since the last sky burned out. I stand in the doorway a minute, just listening. Dust and copper, dead things and old prayers. Smells like home. I take my time picking through what's left. Scavenging's not just about food or clean water. You stop thinking that way real quick out here. It's about the things nobody else bothers with. The weird shit. The forgotten places. And forgotten pieces. The first thing I find is a thimble, rusted through. Blood dried on the inside like someone bit down on it hard while getting stitched back together. I roll it between my fingers and drop it into my pouch. Next is a braid of human hair, tied off with a strip of red silk. Still smelling faintly of smoke, I wrap it around my wrist. I don't know why. Just feels like something worth carrying. After that, I find the tin of teeth. Molars, mostly. Someone took the time to carve little symbols into each one. Letters from a language I don't recognize. Doesn't matter. Teeth are good currency. And these are practically art. And then there's the bell. Tiny, cracked, no clapper inside. Useless, really. I almost leave it behind, but loop it onto my belt. Anyway, better to carry something that looks like noise. Keep certain things confused. By the time I'm done, the light's gone rusty at the edges. Sky's going the color of old bruises. Storm's coming. Or worse. I pull the scarf tighter around my mouth and check the map. It's not much of a map, really. Just a patch of leather I cut from a dead man's back. Skin holds ink better than paper these days. One word scratched deep into it. Scripture. That's all I've got to go on. So I fold it away, cinch the pouch tight, and find a place to hole up for the night. There's an old confessional booth near the back, half buried in the rubble. I crawl inside and pull the door shut, let the dark press in around me. I'm almost asleep when I hear them. Voices, laughing. Close. Not monsters. Worse. People. I don't bother praying. Haven't wasted breath on that in years. I just slide my knife from its sheath, press my back against the wood, and wait for the night to decide how it wants me dead. Scripture of the Thirsting Gods. I didn't sleep much. You never really do in the expanse. You just sort of close your eyes and hope you don't wake up with a blade in your gut or a mouthful of teeth chewing through your shoulder. Sometimes I think the wind keeps watch for me. Or maybe that's just the part of me that's gone soft from being alone too long. I left the cathedral before the sun got too high. Took the map out, what's left of it, and checked the ink. Though I've memorized every line by now. It's not like there's much to it. Some coordinates scratched into leather that's starting to crack in that word, scripture. That's the hook digging under my ribs, dragging me east like I'm already dead and don't know it yet. They say the ones who built the rivers left something behind. Words with weight. Letters shaped like keys. People talk about the old texts like they're ghosts, whispers them in the dark, and maybe, just maybe, the rain comes back. Stupid, right? But out here, hope's just another kind of disease. I guess I'm infected. The road east is nothing special. Just broken asphalt and the occasional ribcage of some long dead machine poking up through the sand. I follow it because the map says so. Because what else is there to follow? Every other path just loops back to the same grave. It's almost noon when I find the convoy. Wrecked and half swallowed by dunes, tankers, flatbeds, the rusted-out skeletons of military rigs. Water haulers from back when there was something worth hauling. People must have killed each other over these. Now the only thing left to bleed is the metal. The bodies are gone, or maybe ground down into the dust. But I know the kind of people who died here. You can feel it in the air. The desperation sticks. I climb down into the wreckage, boots sliding on glass and twisted steel. Takes me a while, but I find something worth keeping. It's not a book, not even close. Just a strip of skin, stretched tight over a bent license plate, stretched up along the edges with copper wire. Somebody took their time with it. The writing's faded, but I can make most of it out if I tilt it toward the light. Speak the mouth. Feed the thirst. The door is the body. It's the real thing. The first piece of the puzzle. I don't know whether to laugh or throw up. Instead, I wrap the plate up carefully, tuck it deep into my pack, and keep moving. And that's when the feeling starts, like something crawling around behind my eyes. A pressure building slow, like water against a dam that's been dry so long it forgot how to hold. Every step gets heavier. I swear I can hear something whispering, but it's not words, just a sound. Low and constant, like a voice humming through bone. I keep telling myself it's nothing, just the heat, just the wind. But I know better. The expanse doesn't let you go chasing secrets without sending something along to watch. And I'm starting to feel watched. By dusk, I hit the edge of a dead city. Whatever name it had is long gone. Probably buried with the last fool who cared enough to remember it. The buildings lean in on each other like drunks about to fight. Windows smashed, streets caved in. But it's shelter, and I'm way too tired to be picky. I pick my way into an old theater, climb up onto the stage, and stretch out under what's left of the rigging. There's a spotlight hanging above me like a single wire, creaking just loud enough to make me think about whether or not it's gonna fall on my head in the middle of the night. I don't sleep, not really. Just lie there holding the strip of skin, tracing the words with my finger like it's gonna tell me something new if I touch it enough times. Speak the mouth, feed the thirst. I keep thinking about the last part. The door is the body. That's the part that sticks. Maybe it's about sacrifice. Maybe it's about death. Maybe it's just telling me I'm already the key and don't even know what I'm about to unlock. And right before I finally drift off, I swear, I hear footsteps outside. Not the wind, not the monster. People laughing, getting closer. The Body Breakers. They came laughing. That was the worst part. Not the knives, not the stench of them, not the way the tattoos on their arms pulsed like things with their own heartbeats. No, the laughing. Six of them, spilling into the theater like they'd just found a lost dog to kick to death. Lantern lights swinging in lazy arcs, shadows warping across the broken seats and shattered glass. The one in front, tall, thin as a crowbar, skin like wax paper stretched too tight over bones. He looked straight at me and smiled so wide, his cheeks split at the corners.
"Hey there,"
he said, voice smooth as rot.
"You wouldn't happen to have anything worth taking, would you?"
I didn't answer, just kept my hand on the knife and tried not to move. Not yet. Not until I had to. The leader stepped closer, boots grinding over plaster dust and old programs. His tattoos writhed along his collarbone like snakes under his skin. Black lines that bent and unbent in slow waves pulsing when he spoke.
They call me Wretch. You look thirsty.
Behind him came the others. Meyer was next. Big, wet man, sweating like someone had poured grease down his back. His tattoos bubbled up in little blisters along his arms, and every time he flexed, they burst and ran back. I could smell him before I even saw him.
Bet they taste good.
Meyer whispered. He was licking his lips. Tongue fat and pink and slick as a slug. Gnarl came after. No jaw, just a welder's scrap muzzle clamped tight where his mouth should have been. His tattoos looped around his neck like barbed wire, the ends poking out through his skin. He didn't talk, just made these wet choking noises whenever Meyer laughed. Slick followed, humming to herself, eyes stitched shut with black thread. She carried two hooked knives that never stopped moving, little arcs of light catching on the rusted blaze. Her tattoos spiraled out from her empty sockets, twitching like worms feeding on the dark. Rot was the one picking his teeth, skin stretched too tight over bones, cheeks hollowed so deep you could have stored coins in them. His tattoos looked like they'd been burned into place and forgotten, cracked, dry, flaking like dead bark. And Crick? Jesus! Crick was bent double, walking like his spine had snapped in the middle and never healed right. His tattoos didn't even look like designs anymore, just spirals on his stomach, swirling towards the center, where something under the skin kept pushing out, twitching like fingers, trying to get free.
You heard that? They're breathing, still breathing, still got meat on them.
I didn't breathe. Not if I could help it.
Go on. Make this fun.
They moved fast after that, the way real predators do. 1 minute they're standing there licking their teeth, and the next they're across the room, blades flashing and boot stomping and laughter echoing off the rafters. I ducked, rolled, tried to get out of the light. Meyer's hand missed my shoulder by inches, leaving a smear of ink across my arm that stung like fire. I didn't even know he'd touched me until I saw the glowing under the skin. I scrambled for the stage door, but Slick was there first, knives slicing at the air like she could smell where I was going.
You'll feed it.
She whispered, blind eyes weeping ink.
We all feed it.
I didn't fight back. Fighting was just another way to die. I ran, or tried. That's when Wretch spoke again, voice sharp as broken glass. And what came next? Not only will I never forget, but I worry about my own fate.
Now,
he said, and the tattoos answered, the ink answered. The marks on their bodies flared, ink rippling like oil on water, and the space around us changed. It folded like someone had pinched the air between two fingers and twisted. The walls peeled back, the ceiling bent, and from the cracks poured the dark. I didn't mean shadows. I don't mean night. I mean the dark. Something deeper. Something hungry. And it started with Maya. One of the tattoos on his back split open, and something reached out of it. A hand. Maybe, but wrong. Fingers too long. Nails like splinters. It grabbed him by the spine and pulled. Just pulled. Maya's laugh cut off in the middle. His skin sloughed off his bones like a coat coming off, and the rest of him followed into the hole until there wasn't anything left but the smell. Gnarl made it about 2 steps before the thing inside his neck, tattoos, came awake. His head turned backward, snapping like a bird, twisting to see what was behind it. And then his ribcage opened like a trapdoor and sucked him inside himself. Rot didn't even get to scream. Something slid out of the floor, thin as wire, wrapped around his ankles and yanked. He unraveled. Skin, muscle, bone, all peeled apart in neat little spirals, the same shape as the carvings on his teeth. Slick was humming the whole time. Didn't even stop when the darkness poured out from her eye sockets and dragged her inside her own skull. Crick giggled through the whole thing, even when the spirals on his stomach ripped wide, and whatever lived inside him finally got loose. It didn't bother with him, just left his body folded in half like a broken doll, and crawled after me. And Wretch? Wretch stood there smiling, like he'd been waiting for this all along. His tattoos went last. They slithered off his body and into the cracks, whispering promises I didn't stick around to hear. I ran. I didn't know how long. Long enough for the theater to disappear behind me. Long enough for the screams to fade. But the worst part, the smear Maya left on my arm. It's still there, moving, growing, and I know exactly what it wants. Every time I think about pulling the knife, every time I think about spilling someone just to stay alive, I feel its pulse, like it's hungry, like it's waiting for me to feed it too. I keep moving, but I can feel it under the skin, curling tighter every hour, and I'm starting to wonder how long I've got before it opens me up from the inside out. It's quiet now. The kind of quiet that only shows up after the dying's done. I don't move for a long time, just stay crouched behind a half-collapsed pillar, shaking like a leaf about to snap off that branch. Every instinct I've got left is screaming at me to run, but I don't. And I can't. Not with what's left behind. When I finally crawl out, the air's thick with something sweet and rancid, like syrup left out in the sun until it rots. The theater's wrecked, like the void that tore through here didn't bother much with space and time, as it understood them. Half the walls are bent in on themselves, like someone folded them up. The floor's a crater of splintered wood and dragging marks. And the bandits? What's left of them, anyway? Meyer's boots, that's all I can find of him. The rest got slurped down through whatever hole opened in his back. Boots just sitting there, toes pointing towards the exit like he meant to leave, but forgot how. Gnarl's scrap muzzle clatters when I nudge it with my foot. The metal's warped like it melted. There's pieces of him stuck inside. I try not to look too close. Rot's teeth are still on the floor, arranged in a perfect little spiral. I pocket them without thinking, muscle memory. I tell myself they might be worth something. but we both know that's not why. But it's Wretch who tells me the most, or what's left of him. See, his skin didn't just rot off like the others. It's peeled, like old parchment curling at the edges. The tattoos are still moving, even now. The ink twitching in the folds of its discarded body, like it's looking for someone new to climb into. That someone being me, probably. I keep my distance and watch them slither. And that's when I see it. The patterns in the ink, the gaps, the missing kills. These tattoos, they weren't just art. They were hunger. Every time they cut someone down, the ink fed, grew, spread. That's what Maya meant, whispering about how I'd taste. Killing wasn't just fun for them. It was the payment, the fuel. And when they stopped, when they went too long without spilling blood, when the hunger outpaced the feeding, that's when the void came knocking. I glanced down at my arm. The smear of ink Meyer left behind isn't a smear anymore. It's a shape. Thin black lines curling under my skin, threading out like roots, looking for something to drink. I wonder how long I've got. A day? Maybe two? Maybe less if I don't feed it, and the worst part is, now that I know how it works, I can feel the part of me that's curious. The part that wonders what might happen if I just... No. I shake it off. Get to work. I don't have time for that kind of thinking. The bandits carried pieces of the scripture. I know they did. It's why they were here. Why they caught up to me. They were looking for the same thing. Maybe they thought finishing the ritual would stop the tattoos from turning on them. Maybe they thought the text would buy them out of the hole they dug. Didn't work out that way. I started searching what's left of them, careful not to touch any more ink. Wretch has a strip of parchment pinned under what's left of his ribcage. It's stitched with fine black thread. The letters burned into the hide in the same spidery scrawl as the piece I found in the convoy wreck. To open the thirst, the body bends. To close the mouth, the blood ascends. Another puzzle piece. Another dead man's prayer. Slick's knives are carved with lines too, along the inside of the hooks. Words so small that they tilt the blades into the light to read them. We are doors. We are keys. We are locks. No wonder they kept killing. No wonder they were laughing. They thought they were getting stronger, smarter, closer. And they were. Just not the way they wanted. I scoop up what I can. The parchment, the blades, the teeth, anything that might matter later. The rest of them I leave for the dark. I don't know if the void's gone or if it's still hanging around, licking the edges of this place. But I know it'll be back. And if I don't keep moving, it's going to find me waiting. The ink in my arm pulses again, just under the skin, not painful. Not yet. Just awake. Hungry. I tighten the scarf around my face, pull up my hood, and slip back into the night. Harvest of the Fallen. The air stinks of burnt ink. It clings to me as I leave the theater, sliding back into the ruins like a shadow that forgot what shape it used to be. I don't look back. Not at the bodies, not at the holes they left behind. The void will handle the cleanup. The smear on my arm's still growing. I can feel it now. When I move, the way it stretches under the skin, curling tighter around the muscle, winding itself around the bone like it's getting comfortable, like it knows this is home for a while. I keep checking the wound like I'm gonna see something new, like maybe it decided to stop. It didn't. The city around me is dead, has been for years. Windows are all broken, Doors hanging off hinges, the only things left alive. Other things smart enough to stay out of sight. I keep thinking about the bandits, about Rich and the others. They weren't idiots. Monsters, sure, but not stupid. They knew what the tattoos were doing to them. You could see it in the way they looked at each other, watching for the first signs of weakness, waiting to see who'd get eaten next. They thought the scripture would save them, but the words only fed the door. The body is the lock, and the key's been turning for a long time. By the time the sky starts bleeding into dawn, I'm deep in the tunnels beneath the city. Old subway lines sagging and flooded with shadows. Smells like mold and rust. The kind of dark that soaks into your teeth and makes you taste it for days. I follow the tracks until the map says stop. And there it is. What's left of the others. The ones who came looking for the texts and didn't make it out. Skeletons curled up on the platform benches like they just sat down for a rest and never got back up. Clothes rotted, skin long gone. But the important parts are still there. The words, etched into bone. Carved right into the femurs and ribs like rows of letters scratched so deep they nearly split the bone in half. I sit there for a while, pulling them apart, laying the pieces out in front of me like puzzle pieces. The same language as the strip of skin. The same loops and hooks. Bend the body. Spill the blood. Feed the mouth. Open the thirst. Over and over again. Like they thought if they wrote it enough times, something would happen. Maybe it did. Maybe they just didn't like what answered. I add the bones to the pack. Wrap them up tight. Parchment, knives, teeth, skin, bone. Little pieces of the end of the world. The map says the next stop is the library, or what's left of it. Word is the full codex is there. Pages bound in leather, peeled off people who asked too many questions. Whole chapters about how to make the rain fall again. About how to fill the rivers back up with something that won't eat you alive. And I'm gonna find it. I have to. Because I can feel the tattoo inside me starting to wake up hungry. And sooner or later, I'm gonna have to feed it. I just hope the words tell me who. And there we leave poor Kier. Staggering through the ruins, one foot in the grave, the other slipping on the edge of something much, much deeper. I do hope you enjoyed tonight's charming little venture into the dry, cracked heart of a world that forgot how to rain. It seems the only thing thicker than the dust out there is the trouble Kia's carrying under their skin now. But hey, what's a good story without a parasite or two? Ancient texts? Check. Whispering ink? Absolutely. A growing scent of inevitable doom? Well, we're just getting started. Because if you thought this was the end of the road, well, my friend, I'm afraid the library awaits in the next episode, and something tells me that the next chapter is going to leave more than a few teeth behind. So thank you for joining me. As always, here on Stories, Fables, Ghostly Tales, I've been your host, the Tale-Teller, your curator of the creepy, your guide to the grim. If you've enjoyed tonight's descent into thirst, don't forget to leave a review, share the chills with a friend, or perhaps scribble some forbidden scripture into the nearest available surface, possibly iTunes. But before I go, I want to say a massive thank you to all of my Patreon supporters, the dark denizens that keep this podcast bubbling along. So first up is my amazing, majestic, jaw-dropping supporter and friend, my Odinite Titan, Matto Star. Now, I thought long and hard about how Matto would fare in the wasteland that we've wandered through tonight, and let me tell you, while the rest of us are out here digging through the dirt for teeth and scraps, Matto, oh no, Matto's already 10 steps ahead, sitting comfortably in a fortified bunker, stocked with enough pharmaceuticals to tranquilize a charging death beast. See, while the fools are fighting over rusted knives and old bones, Matto's out there reverse engineering the black ink in those cursed tattoos, isolating the compound, breaking down its molecular structure, figuring out how to turn parasitic void sludge into a mild sedative with only minimal screaming involved. Bandits, please.
They wouldn't make it past the first snare trap. Not when Matt has rigged the perimeter with pressure sensors, nerve agents, and probably some kind of homemade antihistamine for the dust allergies. And while Care is still trying to decode the scripture, you know, Matto's got the whole thing translated, analysed, and printed in a tiny little field guide with footnotes, colour-coded of course. That's the kind of mind that doesn't just survive the end of the world, it runs it. So to you, Matto Star, thank you for your support, your brilliance, and your friendship. You keep the lights on, the story's turning, and remind us all that in the wasteland, wit and science might just be sharper than any blade. And remember, if the water ever comes back, I'm betting it would be because Matto figured out where it was hiding. Stay clever out there, and thank you so much, Matto, for supporting me and being my friend. Have a wonderful week. And now, I want to thank the four White Tea Warlord legends that keep this podcast also pumping along. First up is Lesiosaurus Rex. Now, out here in the expanse, when the weak get chewed up and the clever hide in the dirt, Lesiosaurus Rex, well, they're walking straight through the storm, carrying twice their weight in salvage without breaking a sweat. Strength unmatched, willpower steel forged. And when others are crumbling in the heat, Lesiosaurus is probably bench pressing the remains of an old war rig just to keep the blood pumping. So here's to you, Warlord, holding the line, breaking the odds, and proving that in a world built to break people, you simply flex. And the wasteland listens. Thank you so much, Leza, for your incredible support. Now get back out there and show the void who's boss. Thank you so much, mate, for being my friend and supporting me in the way you do, Superstar. Have a fantastic week ahead, and may your gym reps be infinite. Thanks, mate. And my next White Tea Warlord, Joseph Schroeder. Let me tell you, if Joseph had been lurking anywhere near that little bandit situation tonight, there wouldn't have been six of them laughing in that theater. There wouldn't have even been one. See, Joseph Schroeder isn't just an apocalypse survivor. He's the reason anyone else gets to survive. Traps set, lines crossed. Next thing you know, it's not the void cleaning up the mess. It's Joseph. Quick reflexes, sharper instincts, and a track record of turning anything that moves into something that doesn't. Bandits gone. Void creatures, please. Kier would be reading scriptures of clean skulls by now, thanks to Joseph's handiwork. So here's to you, my friend. Thank you for your support, your killer skill set, and for reminding us all that when the world ends, it's only the beginning for people who know how to handle it. Thank you, mate, for your amazing support, your friendship, and have a fantastic week ahead. Thanks, Joseph. And my next White Tea Warlord, the amazing Feline Maya. How could we end tonight without bowing our head to Maya, the one and only commander of the wasteland's most ruthless army of cats? While the rest of us are out here scraping by, Maya's already slipped through the cracks, cunning, unseen, feline grace in human form, with 100 sets of eyes glowing in the dark at her back. When the bandits came for Kier, Maya was probably watching them from the rafters, waiting to see who'd be left standing and ready to pick through the remains with a smile and a tail flick. Thank you, Maya, for your brilliant support, your survival instincts, and for proving that out here, the clever and the clawed always land on their feet. Thank you so much, Maya, for your support and your friendship. Have a kick-ass week ahead. Thank you so much. And my final White Tea Warlord, Sangeetha Sagar. A very special thank you to you, Sangeetha, my spirit walker, listener of the Old One, and the reason the expanse still whispers at night. While the rest of us cling to what life we've got, Sangeetha is already halfway between worlds, walking the forgotten paths and speaking in tongues the void remembers and obeys. If Kier had any sense, they'd be following the signs Sangeetha left behind. Chalk marks on stone, bones arranged just so. Warnings only the wise can read. Thank you, Sangeetha, for your incredible support, your connection to the deep, and for reminding us that survival is one thing, but bending reality to your will, that's real power. Thank you so much, Sangeetha, for your support and your friendship. Have a brilliant week ahead. Thanks again. And now I want to thank my Earl Grey enforcers, Those that are at the front line, beating the crap out of boredom, I am lucky to have Jessica Garcia, Seductive Smiles, Paige Kramer, Divided by Zero, Juicebox Andy, Just Heather, Peter Raffaelli, and Chad Warren. An absolute joy to have your support. Thank you so much, you legends. And to all my listeners who are still here listening, thank you so much for listening this far. Have yourself a fantastic week ahead of yourselves. Lastly, if you want to support what I do, visit my Patreon, www.patreon.com/SFGT, or leave an iTunes review if you have 10 seconds to spare. Other than that, have a brilliant week ahead, everyone. And as always, till next we meet.
Whisper secrets untold, ghostly tales centuries old. In the shadows, mysteries unfold. Listeners gather, brave and bold. Stories, fables, ghostly tales. In every shadow, a truth unveils. As the night around us prevails, every whispered secret sails. Around the fire, eyes wide with fear. Tales of the unseen draw near, blurring lines between.
To my patrons, Lordus, and a huge shout out to Matostar, Blizzosaurus, Joseph, Maya, and Sangeetha.